Chapter 3. The Basin. The Uinta Basin has always been more than a little strange. When Mormon leader Brigham Young sent a small expedition to the basin in the 1860s to see if the region was suitable for settlement, the reviews weren't favorable. The scouting party reported back to Young that the basin was a vast contiguity of waste, valueless except for nomadic purposes, hunting grounds for Indians, and to hold the world together. The Uinta Basin is a challenging environment, but a wasteland it isn't. This stunningly beautiful geographic area of northeastern Utah has been inhabited for more than 12,000 years by Native American tribes. The first white men to visit the region arrived with Spanish expeditions led by Fathers Dominguez and Escalante in the 1770s. Hunters, trappers, and traders followed. In 1861, President Abraham Lincoln established the Uinta Indian Reservation that encompassed most of the basin. The action was taken because of the numerous armed conflicts between Utes and Mormon settlers in the Provo Valley. Lincoln's order meant that the Utes had to leave the greenery of the Provo Valley for the harsher environment of the Uinta Basin, 150 miles to the east. The tribe was promised that the reservation lands would belong to the Utes for all time. But within a few years, white settlers began to covet those lands for their own economic pursuits, so the boundaries of the Ute territory were slowly and inexorably carved into ever smaller pieces. When Mormon settlers returned to the Uinta region to stay in the 1880s, the Utes' hold on their lands became even less tenable. In 1885, miners prospecting on tribal lands discovered rich deposits of a black hydrocarbon that would prove essential in the manufacture of paints, varnish, lacquer, and insulating materials. The rare mineral was named gilsonite after Samuel Henry Gilson, an early proponent of gilsonite's economic potential. When word spread about the value of gilsonite, aggressive mining interests staked claims and set up operations on reservation lands, even though such actions were clearly illegal. An honest Indian agent named T.M. Burns temporarily forced the brazen miners to shut down. The mining companies petitioned Congress to declare that more than 7,000 acres of gilsonite-rich Indian land should be reclassified as public domain. Since the property rights of Indian tribes weren't a high priority, Congress approved the bill. The Utes were to be compensated with payments of $20 per acre. Those tribe members who didn't want to sell were plied with whiskey or otherwise tricked, and by 1888, the mining interests obtained control of all of the land they originally sought. In 1881, another reservation was established adjacent to the first in order to accommodate bands of Utes that were forced by the government to get out of Colorado. This concentration of so many potentially hostile Indians prompted the military to authorize the establishment of a new military outpost, one that would be responsible for guarding the Indian frontier in eastern Utah, western Colorado, and southwestern Wyoming. In August of 1886, Major Frederick Benteen led a contingent of the 9th U.S. Cavalry to the spot in northeastern Utah where the Duchesne and Uinta Rivers met. 10 years earlier, Benteen had served with General George Armstrong Custer's ill-fated 7th Cavalry. Benteen survived the massacre at Little Bighorn and eventually was given the assignment of establishing a military outpost at a godforsaken juncture of two obscure rivers in a territory that, for centuries, had been the exclusive domain of the Utes, a nation of proud, fearsome, and unpredictable warriors. When Benteen rode into what would eventually become Fort Duchesne, 75 battle-tested cavalrymen accompanied him. Every one of the 75 troopers was black, the legendary Buffalo Soldiers. The 150 or so white infantrymen who had marched into the area a few days earlier cheered the arrival of reinforcements. By some accounts, the Utes who witnessed the entrance of the new arrivals were less enthusiastic. The reputation of the Buffalo Soldiers preceded them. The legacy of the Buffalo Soldiers is well documented in history books. In the bloody campaigns of the Indian Wars in the late 1800s, approximately 20% of U.S. cavalry troopers were African Americans. Native tribes dubbed them Buffalo Soldiers, in part because of a perceived resemblance between these dark-skinned, curly-haired warriors and the revered buffalo, and in part because of their prowess in battle and in the saddle. at least 18 Congressional Medals of Honor were awarded to Buffalo soldiers as a result of their actions in at least 177 armed engagements during the Indian Wars in the West. What isn't widely known about the Buffalo soldiers stationed at Fort Duchesne is that many, if not most, of them were Freemasons. This may not seem consistent with our current perception of Masons or Freemasons as mostly white, mostly upper-class captains of industry and politics, but it happens to be true. Freemasonry is a secret society that traces its roots back to ancient Egypt. The society first appeared in Europe in the 1300s after a predecessor, the Knights Templars, fell into official disfavor and was generally outlawed. The grandfather of today's Freemasons made its public debut in London in the early 1700s and declared itself a fraternity whose mission was to promote charity and the improvement of society. However, its reliance on secret handshakes, secret ceremonies, its own sign language, and overt mystical symbolism has prompted centuries of suspicion by non-Masons. Critics of the society, and there are many, practically a society unto themselves, note that the early Freemason lodges in England were dominated by alchemists, astrologers, and students of the occult. The society's history of absolute secrecy has given birth to generations of lurid speculation, including allegations that the Freemasons are servants of Lucifer. The Masons have done little in the centuries since to rid themselves of their perceived reputation as a festering cauldron of dark intrigues and the mystical arts. In America, many of the key figures in the formation of the Republic were Masons, including Benjamin Franklin. George Washington attended 2 or 3 meetings, but wasn't a cheerleader for the cause, whatever that cause might be. American currency is plastered with Masonic symbols and slogans, largely because of the efforts of a 33rd-degree Freemason named Franklin D. Roosevelt. Future President George H.W. Bush gained his entry to the club when, as a student at Yale, he was initiated into an alleged Freemason farm team known as the Skull and Bones Society, which accepts a maximum of 50 new members each year, all of them male and all of them rich. Conspiracy theorists suspect that the Freemasons are adept in the mystical arts, that they have mastered certain supernatural abilities, and that they consider their upper echelon members to be gods, beings who have achieved spiritual perfection. On a more mundane level, critics also allege that the Freemasons, or their alleged co-conspirators, the Illuminati, the Trilateralists, and the Bilderbergers, are intent upon imposing a new world order, a one-world government, a system under which national interests are subservient to the greater planetary good, that is, good as determined by the Freemasons. This is one hell of an ambitious conspiracy theory. It seems so incongruous on the surface to presume any possible connection between black soldiers stationed at a remote outpost in Utah in the late 1800s and a secret mystical society still bent on world domination in the early 21st century. Nonetheless, the Buffalo soldiers of Fort Duchesne were full-fledged, ritual-practicing, secret handshaking members of the world's best-known, most influential, and most mysterious male fraternity. The soldiers of Fort Duchesne became Freemasons because of an emancipated slave named Prince Hall, who emigrated from England to America and established African Lodge No. 1 in Boston on July 3, 1776, certainly a precipitous moment in American history. Although there are disputes about the legitimacy of this account, Prince Hall lodges quickly multiplied in the new nation. One of those lodges was established in Texas in the mid-1800s. Which is where it intersected with attachments of the 9th and 10th Cavalry, the Buffalo Soldiers. A few decades later, the Masonic seeds that had been planted by that frontier lodge in Texas found their way to a remote corner of Utah. The Utes who live in Fort Duchesne today are very familiar with the stories about the Buffalo Soldiers and their interest in Freemasonry. A patch of ground that once was designated as the graveyard for the Buffalo Soldiers has since been covered over with houses built for Ute tribe members. And that's where things begin connecting to our story. The one right at Turnkey. There's supposed to be a graveyard right in there, a former tribal police officer told us in an interview. But still they built houses. When they built apartments, they built them right over top of that graveyard. Black soldiers. Mostly black soldiers in there. My grandmother told me about that years ago. The tale reeks of irony. After decades of spooky Hollywood stories about greedy Caucasians building housing developments over Indian burial grounds, thus unleashing hostile Native American poltergeists bent on revenge, is it possible that Indian opportunists may have disturbed the spirits of dead African American soldiers who, in life, were steeped in mystical arts? By building homes over a known graveyard, did the Utes awaken an unknown force that has since plagued them with ongoing appearances by unearthly beasts and other inexplicable phenomena? It's a question tinged with superstition and sensationalism, but it's one that some tribe members have asked themselves for years. When Congress designated the 7,000 acres of Ute land as part of the public domain, it inadvertently exempted that acreage from any official control or law enforcement. A bawdy collection of saloons and brothels quickly sprang up, and the soldiers of Fort Duchesne were among the most loyal customers, even though the so-called Duchesne Strip was officially off-limits to all military personnel. Outlaws like Butch Cassidy and Elsie Lay hid out in the Strip since no lawmen had jurisdiction there. Soldiers, both black and white, drank and cavorted with miners, with outlaws, with prostitutes, and with Utes. As the soldiers returned to the fort following their drunken forays, they often passed by a ravine that became a handy spot for disposing of empty whiskey bottles. So many bottles were tossed into the ravine that it eventually earned the name Bottle Hollow, a term still used today. Bottle Hollow is now mostly covered by water. In 1970, the federal government authorized the creation of a reservoir on Ute land in partial repayment for the diversion of tribal waters for the Central Utah Water Project. Today, the Bottle Hollow Reservoir covers some 420 acres and is a popular fishing spot. The fact that Bottle Hollow almost directly abuts Skinwalker Ranch is not lost on the Utes or other local residents. The reservoir has a mysterious legacy of its own, one that seems inextricably linked to the ranch. The Utes have long believed that Bottle Hollow is inhabited by one or more large aquatic snakes, something akin to the sea serpent legends that are attached to other, much older bodies of water around the world. Eyewitness reports of serpent sightings in the reservoir date back almost to the time when Bottle Hollow was first filled with water. Obviously, the reservoir isn't old enough to be inhabited by a Paleolithic oddity that somehow survived into modern times. But what are we to make of the statements made to us by several seemingly honest witnesses, people who didn't want any public attention whatsoever? One eyewitness is the same tribal police officer who told us about the graveyard of the Buffalo Soldiers. "We used to see things crawling around in the water that looked like giant snakes," he told us. "It would swim straight down from the marina and go all the way down to the bottom end. You could see it on moonlit nights." "I've seen that." "Well, everybody, the other guys, have seen that snake in there too." Tribal police officers say an inordinate number of drowning cases have occurred in Bottle Hollow over the years, and at least some of them are unofficially attributed to the presence of the mystery snake. One case that was investigated by police involved the death of a Ute woman who was swimming at night with a male companion. Witnesses on the beach said the woman screamed that something in the water had grabbed her and was pulling her under. Her companion told officers that he dove under the water and grappled with a huge snake in an effort to free the woman, but she was dead by the time he got her back to the surface. Obviously, there are other potential explanations for what occurred that night, but the witnesses on the beach supported this version of the event, and investigators took the report seriously. There are also numerous accounts of strange lights that have been seen entering and leaving the waters of Bottle Hollow. In 1998, a police officer told us that he saw a large light plunge into the middle of the reservoir and then quickly exit before flying away into the night sky. The witness did not remember whether the object made any kind of splashing sound during its entry or emergence from the dark water. In 2002, we interviewed four young Caucasian men who said they had recently been on the beach with their dates when a blue-white ball of light flew out of the darkness from the direction of the Gorman Ranch. The glowing ball dove into the water just a few feet from the shore, then emerged seconds later. The mystery object had changed its shape while submerged, the witnesses said. From the original ball shape that entered the water, it emerged as something resembling a shimmering, maneuverable, belt-shaped shaft of light. After performing a brief, writhing aerial dance, the belt of light zipped away at a high rate of speed, hugging the ground before disappearing below the top of Skinwalker Ridge. After questioning the four men at length about their backgrounds and the sighting itself, we concluded that they were honestly describing the event to the best of their abilities. They certainly weren't seeking publicity and requested that their names not be made public. One other salient point about the Buffalo Soldiers and the strange occurrences in the vicinity of this graveyard is worth mentioning. A geologic feature, now known as Skinwalker Ridge, contains an unusual carving, which was discovered by Tom Gorman and was later examined by the scientific team that would investigate the ranch. It's an inscription located several feet below the top of the ridge, as if someone had hung suspended from the rim in order to carve it into the rock. The best guess is that the carving is 100 or more years old. It's a Masonic symbol, no question about it, a strong suggestion that at least a few of the Freemasons among the Buffalo Soldiers may have visited the Gorman Ranch a long time ago. Today, Uintah County, in the heart of the basin, consists of 4,400 square miles and more than 25,000 residents, most of them white Mormons. Nearly a tenth of the population is Ute Indian, with their own settlements near White Rocks, Fort Duchesne, and Randlett. The county's economy is based mostly on ranching and farming, with cattle, hay, and alfalfa the principal agricultural products. Geologists describe the region as an unusually rich source of hydrocarbon-bearing materials, including oil, oil shale, tar sands, and coal. Oil and gas deposits were discovered in the area in the 1950s and are still being exploited. It is not uncommon to see oil rigs pumping away on almost any main road in the region. In addition, Uintah County officials often refer to their area as dinosaur country because of the prevalence of fossilized remains from prehistoric times. Of course, the Gormans were completely unaware of this history of the area when they bought their ranch in the Uintah Basin. They had escaped the frying pan of small-town gossip and stepped into the terrifying fire of the unknown.